Blog Talk Radio.
We'd like to welcome you again to another episode of Missing Pages of History. This program is a program that's dedicated to serving underserved communities. As always, we'd like to give you information that you can use as a tool to improve humanity in your communities. This evening, we're going to be discussing or we're doing an analysis of the state of Baltimore and Black Lives Matter. We have Emmanuel from North Carolina. Not only is he an educator, but he also is a historian. He has had the opportunity to live in Baltimore and knows many well-connected people who have influenced that city. And when we recently talk about the phenomena that recently took place in Baltimore, there are broader issues or other issues I think the public need to be aware of to get a proper understanding of what is happening in Baltimore. So on that note, we'd like to welcome you again to Missing Pages. We'd like to bring Emmanuel in to Missing Pages History and say welcome to him. And Emmanuel, we'd like for you to, in essence, just start with this particular question as relates to doing analysis of the city of Baltimore and what's going on now as it relates to Black Lives Matter. Can you give us an analysis of why Baltimore is crying out for justice? Why is this call for justice in Baltimore?
Well, first of all, thank you. Baltimore has been up under this racist siege for the last 50 years or more. It's been very prevalent since then. 65, 66, 67, I lived there for 20 years. And you encountered not only crime and insecurity, but also law enforcement that is unjust and racist. I lived there for many years in the city. And it was amazing when you asked police officers certain things, what they would say to you bluntly. A friend of mine's wife's car was stolen, and he came to me and said, the answer ball policeman explained the apartment's strategy for recovering vehicles. He said, if we see a group of young black guys in a car, we pull them over. That is the Baltimore police strategy. Let's take the system there, the Baltimore jail, which is known for corruption and gang rule. That's who run the Baltimore jail. A federal investigation found that one gang leader in the jail fathered 5 children by 4 female guards. Now, what do we got going on here? That's amazing to me. Corruption at its best. When the police and the community do not mix well, you're going to have a combustible mix, and that's what happened in Baltimore. It was a combustible mix. It's not about the police using force. It wasn't about what it's all about. It's about a system that is not addressing young people's needs. It's a culture of grievance. Well, I'm going to give you something about culture of grievance. Let's give you an example. And most of the time, people talk about things that is very relevant. If white parents found their children damaged by lead poisoning, which is most of the decayed living areas of Baltimore with lead poisoning, they'll probably have them demolished. Most blacks are consigned to dismal schools, denied any opportunity to get ahead at those schools. Not going to happen. And most likely they'll end up in prison in college. They're harassed by police constantly, profiling, and occasionally killed by the police. Well, parents of any color should protest this type peacefully, loudly, for such injustices. But that's not the grievance. They're not going to grieve. But is this a learning lesson? Is this a learning lesson of what? There's a commission called Truth and Reconciliation Commission, and they need to explore racial inequities in America, not only in Baltimore. The inequities are very systemic. As I noticed on the program, in the media, they focus on CVS store being burned. But they ignore the systemic problem in Baltimore. What are the problems in Baltimore? I'll enumerate a few of those for you. Broken schools. Joblessness. No jobs. 30% black unemployment. Fatherless kids. It's very difficult to live when you fetch a man or woman sometimes when there is no job. The money is very inequitable. You got drugs, heroin, marijuana, and you got oppressive policing, very oppressive. But the worst kind of poverty out there is hopelessness. They have no hope at all. Injustice in Baltimore. I'm so happy they elected someone that's going to prosecute what we saw on camera, what has happened in the police department of Baltimore. And this is an epidemic, by the way. A total epidemic. But the good part about it is that the African-American leaders in Baltimore, I give them great credit. They provided firm moral guidance, which I'm just greatly enthused with that, and emphasized that street violence was unconscionable, not accepted. We have to do something. We have to do something about this. What was captured on video, it's not, can be tolerated any longer. Any longer. Again, law enforcement, they hide behind the badges, the uniforms, and most of them are vigilantes. Background checks on these guys, a lot of nepotism in the police department, because the father was one, the uncle was a police officer. That's the qualification to be a police officer. Nepotism. In the fire department, the same way. Uncle was a fireman. I want to be a police officer. Of course, you want to be one, you got to qualify to be one. The police department in Baltimore, I believe, is 60% white and 40% black. It should be the other way around. And all our cities, the same way. You find out that white police officers, they in basically black towns. One or two blacks and that's it. Should be the other way around. The police chief should be black. The mayor, city council, do the same thing that they do. You're not going to go in their white towns and put in 60 black police officers and 5 whites. It ain't going to happen. They make the blueprint for you. We just don't follow the blueprint. But whites, they always come in on, I say again, the culture of grievance. They always got excuses. They always have excuses for things that they do. But again, we can no longer tolerate this. We cannot do it. If it was happening to them, it would be combustible. Happening to blacks, because again, they have to feel the majority of blacks in Baltimore between ages 16 and 64 years of age are unemployed. We're talking about close to 30%. White employment there is 4%. Well, of course you're going to have more crime if you don't have a job. You're going to knock somebody in the head to try to get some money. This is how they create this. There's 26 think tanks that study black America. There's not a one that studied white America. We need to start studying them. I have. I study them on a daily basis, things that they do. And they got excuses for them. But street violence is not the way to do it. Voting, that's why they don't want you to vote. You can vote them out. The thing is to vote them out. Take your cities over. They won't let you take their cities over. But the main thing is these wretched conditions have to stop. The police use of force, that system has to stop. They don't mind paying out civil suits. I think Baldwin's paid, I think, about $11 million. They always downgrade it, which they sue for. Their active suit's over $100 million. One got sued, I think, last year, $7.5 million. They reduced it to $265,000. Well, that's how they count it. So what is the beginning of the suit? Well, it's always higher, so it's not a problem there. But again, when you loot shops and attack police officers, you like to be shot by the white men, by the white police officers. But an interesting stat that is amazing to me. African-American men are likely to be shot and killed 21 times more than white men. 21 times. And mostly black men are unarmed. White men are basically armed when they shoot them. They're armed. You're not. They don't care. Nobody wants their son to end up like Freddie Gray. Nobody in Baltimore, white or black, don't want that to happen. But it happened. It happened in all our states. They really don't care. And they don't get punished. It's time for them to start getting punished. Because they're vigilantes, basically. With a badge and a police uniform on. You check their background, most of them can't pass the background check. Training is what they do. Nothing. Shoot. All they know how to do is shoot. How you shoot unarmed people? How they going to hurt you and 6, 7, 8, 9 of you? You should be on the police force if it takes 8 or 9 people to take down one man. I look at that Staten Island incident. Loose cigarettes. Choked that man out, had his hands up, everything. You can't hold your hands up. You're scared once you see this stuff, what's happening now. You don't want the police to be near you sometimes. There's eyeball, you look at you, and you run. Yes, I'm going to run, too, because I'm scared of them, too. I've seen what they've done. I've seen stuff that people have never seen before. You didn't bring a man beat up. Just say they resisted arrest. That's all. That'll take care of you. Beat them up. This is not slavery anymore where you beat and you murder and you hung people and it was all right, never went to trial for it. But you got to go to trial now. These men murdered this young man. Should be tried just like a murderer. It's like a citizen. Everybody's a citizen first. But this is the aggression of racist police officers in the police department. Unjust as it can be. It's amazing when I look at schools now, they're painted basically prison gray. Some got bars on them. Are they getting these kids ready to go already in fourth, fifth, sixth grade? This is what they're doing? Yes, this is what they're doing. Because the judges, the DAs, retired police chiefs have to fill these private enterprises up. You, They don't get paid off of empty sales. You got to put some out of it in there. We're 13% of the population. And 66% of us in some type of prison system. 66%. We're 13% of the population. Something wrong with that number. So what are you doing? It's all systematically done. I said it, and I'm going to say it again. Black people, you are the profit margin of America. When integration got started in the Virginian Commonwealth, first thing they said was, we don't mind integration, but we're not going to integrate the money. They want to make sure that their money is not integrated. Very simple. If you integrate the money, you have very little crime, very little poverty, little everything. It's what America was supposed to be. Just a bunch of lies. A bunch of lies. So I'm going to sum this up. It's just amazing. I hope we're learning lessons. And again, it's time for the Truth and Reconciliation Commission to step back and explore racial inequities in America. You know, it's a real crisis here in America. But it's sometimes our own complacency and our systematic long-term denial of equal opportunity to people based on their skin color and their zip code. This is the bottom line. Our complacency of the systemic discrimination is long-term, and is long-term denial of equal opportunity to people based on their skin color and their zip code.
Can you explain a little bit about how the zip code plays into this phenomenon?
Well, zip code is where a concentration of black people live. And the real estate back in the day when it had in 1965, they would actually load up people on vans and buses to take them out to certain zip codes for blacks with what are called white flight. They were leaving, integrating the housing. And what they would do would take you to certain zip codes, and you would see for sale signs for some people. They would sell you the house twice as much as whites paid for it, high interest rates. Then the inspection would come in and say certain things aren't right, so now you got to take out a second mortgage. The black folk invented second mortgages. They can say what they want to say, but we invented that. Because you didn't have the money enough to, you know, to fix it right away. So a second mortgage you put on your home to fix the roof, to make sure the outlets are not 9 feet apart, or, you know, the new codes are 7 years apart. So everything changed to make money off of you when you moved into these zip codes. They were mainly white at that particular time. But now they put you in certain sections of town or city, concentration of blacks to a certain degree. I call them reservations. People call them projects. That's where they put you at. Because, again, they call it equal housing. How can it be equal housing when you go out into the suburbs and go out to the edge of town? You see houses standing by themselves, like in Baltimore. Then in the city, all you see is just these row houses all by each other. You will have, that's a combustible mix. Well, let's put them all together. We can find them. We can monitor them. We can monitor them and profile them so they know where you are. And they put you in certain zip codes. And once they do that, they can gerrymander for voting so you have less delegates representing you from the state or in the state legislature. This is what they do to control that vote from one area. Then you got too many there. Not happen with the general election. That's a different story. But to the district elections, this can happen. And it happened all of the time. Gerrymandering is one of the things that I really hate. They lump you all together in this zip code, and you might get two reps You might have a population there of 50,000 people. You get two or three reps. Then you got a white area that might have 3,000 people, and they get four reps. So you can't win. The system is rigged. We have to unrig the system and talk about it and expose the system. And that's what I do. I'm going to expose the system. Everything here is system. It's system detected. They don't want you to detect the system. They're always a distraction. See, routing, when they ride in Baltimore, it distracts from those inequities. You're riding to really talk about what's the underlying inequities that demands attention. We don't talk about, I gave you the underlying dimensions. What we got? Broken schools, no jobs. We got drugs, oppressive police officers, poverty. You got all of this. Housing, people with minimum wage. 66% of black America makes under $10 an hour. Whites, less than 9%. That disparity should not be in place. But it's in place. They're going to keep it there. Because, again, there's 26 think tanks that's studying what I'm telling you, and how you keep it there, to keep the power and the money in one place. Don't allow you to own but so much. If you get too big, they find a way to get rid of you some type of way. And they take wherever the tax money go, that's where whites go. Affordable Care Act, we're going to have more doctors and nurses you ever seen in your life. And hospitals getting bigger, 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 expanding. We call them, that's where the money going. They go where the money's at. We have to do the same thing. Go where the money goes. The money goes to police departments, fire departments. Why you think it's like it is? Why you think it's 90% white police department in the black community? Because the equity is there. When they retire, they promote them, make sure they get the best of time they can get, and they move to Florida and Arizona and have a good time. And they talk about you, distract you some kind of way. That's why they're police officers. Because that is big money. Big time benefits and big time retirement. So guys, I'm telling you out there, women, police officers and firemen, they get paid. They get paid.
Emmanuel, let me stop you for a second, and I want you to explain to our listening audience, there are two crucial points I'd like for you to articulate on as relates to doing analysis of the city of Baltimore. Number one, recently we have seen an outcry from the European community or the white community in Baltimore where they are calling for the end of the curfew. What is the real motivation behind that? Can you give our people another perspective on what is this all about? Where the curfew was not affecting their community per se, but they are saying now they want to stop. What's the rationale behind that? What's going on with that?
The rationale behind that is this. They live out in the suburbs, but their businesses are in the city of Baltimore. They're not making no money. The bottom line is M-O-N-E-Y. If they don't open their stores, they're taking losses. Can't handle that. The Baltimore Orioles, just to make an example, in Baltimore City, the game was played, but no audience or no fans. Uh-oh. Let's talk about the contributors to the Baltimore Orioles. Talk about vendors. Let's talk about shops around there. Let's talk about inside the stadium vendors. No money. Parking, no money. They can't take them about one day of that. They cannot take a weekend. You can't go downtown. Baltimore's a tourist town to a certain extent. They got the aquarium down there. They got a lot of things down there. A lot of restaurants around that harbor. No money. That's why they were protesting. They're never going to tell you the truth. I'm going to tell you the truth. It's all about the money. If your shop ain't open for 3-4 days and your businesses are downtown in Baltimore, you got a curfew, That means nobody can shop at your stores. Nobody. The streets of Baltimore, you go downtown, there's a lot of businesses down there. You got Baltimore Street. You got where they do the burlesque stuff down there. That is loaded to 2 o'clock at night. Those restaurants down there are very expensive around that stadium. Can't nobody stay at the hotel. This is a lot of money. How many millions are lost? I don't know. Millions of dollars got lost. Might have been a billion got lost in 3-4 days. But that was the rationale behind that. That's why they're protesting. Put the sign that we're not making no money. Our business is not making no money. Put that sign up. They're not going to put that sign up. They never want you to know the truth about capitalism. They don't allow you to have no businesses down there. You can't get nothing down there. But, again, taking your money. The thing is not to integrate the money. That's why we don't have only 2% of the business in America belong to black people. Just 2%, and they're mainly 5 that we have. Barbershops, salons, funeral homes, a few restaurants, not that many no more. But that's all we have. We got 82 gas stations across this country. 82. 71 car dealerships. 71 out of close to 7,000. How can you do anything when everything is not nowhere close to being equal? Inequity is totally, and this cannot be tolerated. Either we sanction some of these businesses downtown, just like the riot, don't go. They didn't do it for 3-4 days. Do the same thing. Don't go on Easter. Don't shop at Christmas. Hit them in the pocketbook, and things will get better. You have to have a system and a strategy, too. Of the $1.4 trillion we spend, we'll recycle $50 billion. Go back in our community. $50 billion. That's all. They got $1 trillion, our money, and don't like you because of your skin color and your zip code. Hope I cleared everything up for everybody on that one, why they protested. Because, again, they weren't making any money. 3 days of that downtown Baltimore, $1 billion probably was lost. That's why they protested. Because of money. They live on the suburbs. It didn't bother them. But their businesses is in the city, and they don't stay there. That's why they protest.
What we'd like to do right now to our listening audience, we'd like to let you know that you are listening to Missing Pages of History, which is a bi-weekly program. You can catch up here every other Saturday at 12 noon. And you also can feel free to call in by dialing 818-337-0016. That's 818-337-0016. If you have any views or comments, please hit 1, and we will acknowledge your last number. We also like to just share with you that we do have an upcoming second quarter raffle drawing contest coming up June the 6th. It's still not too late to purchase your tickets. If you'd like to purchase a ticket and support the works and the cause of Mr. Page of History, you can call us up at 804-726-3217 or you can email us at missingpagesofhistory1@yahoo.com. We'd like to alert our listening audience who may be online listening to this program that we're going to be going over for an additional 15 minutes. You may want to try to chime in at 818-337-0016 or make sure you catch this program on the archive by going to blogtalkradio.com/missing-pages-of-history-inc. Again, we thank you for your past support and your continued support. And we will continue to dialogue on this area or theme tonight, which we're talking about. We are doing analysis of the city of Baltimore and Black Lives Matter with our contributor, the analyst, who also is the historian, Emmanuel, out of North Carolina. Feel free to call in 818-337-0016. Emmanuel, one interesting point I think it would be good for the audience to learn is the history of how Baltimore became the way it is in terms of how they can structure cities to have a high level of crime. Can you just talk about some of the decisions and make up how Baltimore came to be the way it is, particularly in terms of this question of how you can create crime among a certain population of people?
Well, not so much in Baltimore. All the large cities have this type of systemic problem. And again, see, crime pays. Well, how did crime pay? Well, I believe the numbers are approximately $105,000 to keep an inmate or keep a person in jail, $105,000. The system of private enterprise is $65,000. So the government saving basically $40,000. Well, how do we make a profit off of this? How do we make a profit? Who's going to make the profit off of? Well, prior to that particular time, slavery didn't pay nobody nothing for 400 years, basically. Nobody got paid. Now you got to pay somebody. Well, we got a problem. Well, how do we take these people and put them into a certain, you know, certain places? I saw Baltimore go into discrimination. I got there in 1961. I could not believe what was going on. Baltimore, we shopped on three streets, Monument Street, Gay Street, and Pennsylvania Avenue. All those stores owned by Jews, basically, because you couldn't have no store. I tried to get a man's store, and I couldn't get one. Because Jews own most of the buildings, and they wouldn't let me a building. Because you're not going to impede on their profit or have competition. They didn't want that. So this is what Baltimore got started, basically like that. Whites moved out of certain blocks. They called it block busting. So they get a white person moving to a block, and they talk to them and tell them, basically, I can get double for you, money for you. We're building suburbs out of the town. We're going to build shopping centers out of town, and you can move out there, and it's going to be real nice. We're going to make it very nice. That's how the structure got started. In 1962, you couldn't shop downtown in Baltimore. Then basically wouldn't even allow downtown. When you had a job downtown, you was a stock boy or you were something behind the rooms or behind the doors. You were not seen outside, basically, of downtown. Why you get stopped sometimes, why are you going down there? But that structure started then. I'm like, what are they doing? And what they did was they made sure the section of the city with the zip codes, they put them in certain places where the buses were. Of course, you didn't have cars. Very few blacks had cars in Baltimore. You didn't make the money to get a car. So the bang thing, you rode the buses. And they sure those buses stayed within the inner city. The city dramatically changed, about close to 70% African-American. Whites lived out of town, but the bang thing, don't let them have no businesses in town. They're going to own all the businesses. That was the deal. City ordinances say, well, you can't do this, you can't put nothing here, you can't put nothing there. Well, all of a sudden, when whites started basically buying some of the, I call corner stores, they went inside a row house. They'd take the corner on the row house, the basement, and they make a store out of it. You couldn't do that in your own community. They didn't allow you to do that. But they allowed whites to do it. Well, I can't get a license permit to put a store here. No, you couldn't put one there. They let you put a barbershop or a beauty salon or a funeral home and a restaurant. That's far as you were going. You weren't going no further than that. You're not going to start anything else. And one more street that blacks shopped on was North Avenue. But that was it. So that structure started there. School discrimination started right away. I tried to go to Polytech. They told me I couldn't go to Polytech with all white school. I had to go to Frederick Douglass High School. That's where I went. So I'm like, wow, I want to be a doctor. I ended up being an engineer, which in Polytech was engineering school. So you couldn't go there. So the structure started an educational system, first of all. Then right away they did something that's going to blow people's mind. When I was going to school, you got paddled. Well, from integrated schools, the paddling stopped. Why? You're not going to have no black person beating no white person's rump in school. That's how it all got stopped. Corporate punishment in school stopped right away. Integration stopped beating our kids in school. That's what happened to our children. Principals, listen, principals, beating our children in school with a paddle. But look what happened. How it got stopped. Then prayer got stopped. Well, we serve a different God, evidently. They didn't want us to stand the same God. We still do pledge allegiance. That was okay. But these are the kind of things that happen. These are the things that happen in Baltimore. When I went through to Baltimore, I looked at the funeral homes. None of the funeral homes had Cadillacs. They had Oldsmobiles and 225. You couldn't buy a Cadillac. Cadillac was distinguished. Mercedes-Benz hadn't come along doing cars here, all the luxury cars right here. But that's how they separated you. This was how they did it. Black funeral home had Oldsmobiles and Buicks. White funeral has Continental Lincolns. They had Cadillacs and New Yorkers, Chrysler's. Everything was like that. They made sure we started a supermarket. They burned it down. You couldn't get food for the poop supermarket. Benzo wouldn't sell it to you. Just crazy stuff in Baltimore. It's been like that since I was there. I was there about at least 50 years. 50 were back and being 54 and I visited everything else. I had to get up out of there. Had to get up out of there. Because of those reasons. A lot of reasons I can give you why. Baltimore was, again, was gerrymandered, but had different districts. They made sure blacks, they showed you houses you could not go in. They chose your housing for you when they blockbusted. They told whites where to go and wouldn't sell you a trick, you'll sell you to a house in that particular area. I went to move to buy a house in the suburbs, a place called Pikesville. Couldn't get a house there. Wouldn't sell me one. So these are kind of things. They made housing different for you, very difficult for you. They basically said, this is where you're going to live, where we can monitor you and control you and make sure we keep an eye on you. After riots, it got even worse. Martin Luther King got killed, got even worse. Got worse. They burned. Insurance company paid off. They bought back better stores, moved things to the suburbs, basically. So this is what this is all about. And how many cities are like this? Impoverished. Telling you where to live at. Telling you your house is not even worth what it's telling it for you. You buy a house for $7,000. They bought a house for $7,000. Sell you for $14,000, $15,000. Interest rate was 14%, 15%, 16%. And the interest rate is 4% and 5%. This the way it was done. They sold blacks. When they sold certain things to them, higher than whites every time. You wanted it so bad because you want to try to be, when you try to be something or look at something, look, you know, twice as much. You bought a car. Oh, my God. You get ripped off. Got the white boy, you pay for his car. You tell him, take it down and take it to him. He should have never showed you that. He should never show you what you paid for the car. You pay higher for things than whites. You prison sentence is longer for the same crime, 7.5 years longer for the same crime, sentencing-wise, because they make money off of you. The prison system makes money off of you. There's 45 million people associated with the prison system. They get jobs, vendors supply the food, uniforms, they build the prisons. Who do all of that? Who are the people that construct the prisons? They aren't black. Who pay them? They aren't black. Who buy the land? They aren't black. The retirement, all that money from wardens, everybody else, whoo, they make a fortune. Then they get a chance to invest in the prison system with these private enterprises and everything else. They get involved in that. They make sure they get kickbacks, everything else. That's how corrupt Baltimore is. Not only Baltimore, New Jersey, the New Yorks of the world, the Chicago, the Detroits. And what they do is bleed the money out of the city. They bleed them with writing tickets. How you get 93% of the tickets that's written? 25% of the revenue in most cities come from writing tickets, from traffic tickets. And who gets the traffic tickets? We're not NASCAR 500 people. But we get all the tickets. We go to prison because we don't have lawyers to get them out of prison. They gave a guy here, a sheriff, they gave a sheriff here, he embezzled $325,000. They gave him 6 years probation. He got the money, ain't been to jail. Anybody else? They've been in jail for 20 years. You rob a place for $20, they won't send you up the creek for 15 years. No time, and got his retirement. He resigned and walked out with almost $80,000 a year. And got the free 25 and gave that back. And got 6 months probation.
Well, man, you often say crime pays, but in terms of wrapping up the show, I would like for you to respond to the last question. I'll give you about 2 minutes at most. There seemed to be some confusion around who really caused the death of Freddie Gray. Do you buy into the story that his death was caused by Freddie Gray as a result of being bumped around in the van? How did he crash his spinal cord? What front part of the lyrics of his dope? How could have this happened? What is your take? Is this an insult, the way he presented this to the public? To you?
It's total stupidity. Anybody in any country, in the world, knowing that you can't get bounced, you should have been tied in the belt and down in there because your hands are tied up, your feet are tied. You ain't no way that you can bounce yourself around in a paddy wagon. And that's his spinal cord got severed because they put their knees in it. There was a weight involved. It made into his back. This is how they arrest people. We got it on cameras. How people are arrested. How they turn them on their back and put their knees behind their neck, on their head, or face against the sidewalk. This is brutality. Do it to them and see what happens. Let it happen to them. See, people talk all they want to talk. Ain't no way. They threw him in the paddleway. They threw him in there. They say he hit his head against the boat or something. They know the boat's in there, but that should be more safe. Take and put rubber or foam around the boat. They didn't do that. They stopped the van a couple of times. What they used to do? Beat you? I've said so many people told me I've been trying. They got brutalized by the police. How they stop and whip them. This is what they normally do. It's in their DNA. They beat you during slavery time. This is just more sophisticated, that's all. Same thing. They can hide behind a badge and hide a uniform and do the same thing they've been doing. They didn't do anything with them then. Why are they going to do something with them now?
And on that note, that's a good question. And the people are going to have to decide how they're going to hold their police department accountable. And on that note, to our listening audience, we will have to close out. And we'd like to say that you have been listening to Emmanuel on North Carolina giving his analysis on analysis of the city of Baltimore and Black Lives Matter. Remember, this is Missing Page of History. We are our weekly program. You can listen to us at 12 noon every other Saturday. Our next program will be May the 23rd. We encourage you to share this information with your supporters or friends or family members to come and join us. And like always, we will always speak truth to power and continue to fill in our missing pages of history. Until next time, we thank you. This has been Missing Pages of History. Emmanuel, 1 minute statement, and we're off the airways. Your final thoughts, Emmanuel.
My final thought is, again, the real crisis isn't one night of young men in the street riding. It's something perhaps even more inexcusable. again, our own complacency of this systematic long-term denial.